There was a guy in a like a silver and blue leotard peeing in the urinal, and I didn't think too much of it until he went up to the sink and washed his hands and then put his gloves on and then pulled the silver mask down over his face. And it wasn't until that exact moment I realized he was cosplaying as Pepsi Man. And I was so fucking jazzed to see somebody cosplaying as Pepsi Man, except we were seeing him in the exact only context in which it is not acceptable to ask to have your picture taken with somebody. And all I wanted to do was get a picture with Pepsi Man, who we saw as soon as we entered Comic-Con, and I couldn't because he just came from the Pepsi can. And I don't know. So if you're out there, Pepsi Man, if you could send me some shots in front of a green screen that I could Photoshop myself into.
Shots of you and your Pepsi Man costume using toilet. I think we can make a lot of money together, bud. Hit me up.
Anyway, we saw Pepsi Man. Good game.
It was the first Infinite Runner.
Yeah.
No, I know. Do you know that there was actually another person in the bathroom and you just didn't see them? Because they were Crystal Pepsi Man.
Okay.
Okay. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best games of the month.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and my game of the month's all right. It's just okay,
my name is Chris Plant, and I already know that I won this month.
My name is Ross Frostig, and I know the best game of the week. And I also want to say, if you happen to hear Tom Petty playing on the background, that's not me playing music by accident. It's actually Tom Petty, who is warming up on the concert stage right outside my apartment.
Way to brag that Tom Petty is in your house.
So welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in Dungeons and Dragons and fantasy role playing and fashion and milkshakes at Burger King and every. Hey, Russ, can I just fucking get through it, man?
Well, but one of those I wanted to pause and clarify: are there shapes beyond cubes that could be gelatinous?
No,
just cubes.
Yeah.
Okay, and also, cereal based milkshakes at Burger King. I covered those. So we were going to hit those twice this week.
Oh, sports. We do that sometimes.
Sports for sure. We do sports and, also video games, which we're going to be taking kind of a deeper dive into video games this week. You know, they have actually, I don't know if you were paying attention at Comic Convention. But at Comic Convention, they also showed games now too. Did you see this?
Like Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man?
Yeah.
They've actually come a long way since that, judging from the games at Comic Convention.
Like Pac-Man 2, Miss Pac-Man 2?
It's just a bow on her head. Did you know that's the main difference?
I think she's faster also, and that's probably about as deep as sort of gameplay mechanic innovations are going to come in my lifetime, because video games are just Pac-Man.
They've actually come a long way since Pac-Man.
And what the fuck?
I'm here to explore that concept. First off, before we get into our picks for the best games of July 2017, I cannot believe it is almost the end of July already. That's preposterous. Let's talk about our honorable mentions for the month. Anybody
good
got any?
Luck.
Has anybody heard of a game called Player Unknown's Battlegrounds?
Oh man,
I'm at 100 hours on that bad boy, and I still stink like shit.
Man, that's funny because that reminds me of this game called Nier Automata.
So we should talk about
the Destiny 2 beta. Did anybody play that?
Yeah, I played the.
I played it.
The level. I didn't get in the multiplayer.
It is, I thought it was neat. I think that there are, so I was worried because there's some stuff that, like, if they do not tweak, it is going to make the PvE experience pretty rough. I think
cooldowns.
Cooldowns in general are sort of like, so the state of PvP in Destiny 1, which I didn't necessarily think this, but maybe that says more about like how I played and sort of exploited this stuff when I played PvP in Destiny 1. It's very chaotic, right? And so there's just a lot of supers going off all the time and a lot of sticky grenade spam and a lot of stuff like that that sort of makes the experience a little bit more, a little bit less sort of twitchy gunplay focused than I think most folks who play hardcore PvP would want it to be.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that stuff has been dialed down in Destiny 2 in this beta, and it's also been dialed down in the non-competitive PvE experience to, I think, a pretty bad degree. Like, the big thing is grenades are, they take much longer to respawn, and maybe that's something that will be mitigated with like equipment and shit, because that is how it worked in Destiny 1. Grenades take very long to respawn, and they're also weaker. So they got like hit twice, and so grenades just feel really shitty. I played a 30-minute strike and only got my super once, despite the fact that I killed like 110 dudes by the time we finished. Like, yeah. There's some stuff that's just
I think
like,
all that stuff is going to be hammered out, because it's such a big part of like character stuff.
I cannot believe that is our first discussion topic with this beta, because I was like so excited by the stuff that was happening in the single player.
I thought it
mission.
Was beautiful.
Yeah,
I thought it was beautiful. Gorgeous.
It looks great, and there's some. No, Griffin, you already had your chance. You want to complain about grenade spawn times? the biggest moment for me, and this is going to sound dumb, but the biggest moment for me was when I was playing in a single player level, and a character came over and talked to me. While I was playing a level,
yeah,
you know, in other games,
and not any character, it was Mr. Nathan Fillion.
Mr. Nathan Fillion, they sprung for the dosh to get Nathan back. you know, in other games that wouldn't feel revolutionary, but like, damned if it's not pretty groundbreaking
Destiny
to have someone actually like there with you in the world. Now, I don't know what that feels like in the 10th time you play that mission,
sure, yeah, right,
the 15th time, and I've heard that exact criticism leveled. I will say though, I didn't spend, like, especially towards the later months of Destiny, like, I was not revisiting those first missions really at all. I mean,
no,
like,
I think it's an unfair criticism. There's definitely lots of repetition, but it's not like you are, I don't know, going back to the fucking first mission and just, like, having to play through it to get your five spin metal that you need or whatever the fuck. That was definitely
people,
how it was
when
you started.
I mean, they had
story
missions like that, even late in the game. I agree. I don't think story missions are a huge deal. I think they should be, like, super cinematic. Because more often than not, you're playing the strikes a lot more than the story stuff. I really like, I thought you were going to mention this, Justin, the fact that we were playing through a solely single player experience. And at one moment, you may not have seen this, but at one moment, you actually do encounter other players, players.
That was my other favorite thing, because
super
they deployed additional people cinematically. Like, how cool it, like, just when the fight got really bad, you had people there helping you. Like, how it was so cool and smart
really
and
smart.
Neat. And I hope it's really representative of what they're going to do in the full game, because that was such a neat moment. And so much better than, like, just having these hosers that are there with you when you start the mission, instead of having them, like, pop up when you really need some support.
In the shit,
was awesome.
Yeah. The new utility powers are also pretty cool. Not so much on the hunter, like each class has a special extra thing they can do. Like the Titans can lay down like a little wall that will instantly reload your weapon if you hide behind it, which is so sweet. And the Warlocks can lay down like a little healing field or a damage boosting field. And the Hunters have like a dodge dash that if you like kill an enemy right after you come out of it, like it instantly respawns your melee, and then your melee kill instantly respawns the dodge dash. So that one's not as helpful to other people, but it lends itself to a really fun play style of just like fucking swimming through enemies like that. That's really cool. And also the new public event stuff looks really great. There was a, I think, an IGN like exclusive video that was a lot of stuff about how public events and like public adventures and stuff are changing. That looks really promising. I think it looks hot as hell, and I'm very excited.
I think it'll be really good. I'm excited about it. Plant, did you play it at all?
I think my big thing was I forgot that I actually really enjoyed Halo, because I haven't enjoyed them for a very long time, probably since the ODST. And
come on, Reach was good.
Reach was good. Yeah, Reach was good. But this was that single player mission. I don't know what about it. I really can't pin it down, because I would have to go back to Halo games. But it like was triggering something in me that was reminiscent of that. And it felt like Halo 2. It really felt like Halo.
That sequence where you're like walking through the like wounded soldiers was from Halo 2. Like that same thing happened.
But
much
even
more
just
cinematic.
The level design. I mean, it just felt good in a way that I came into Destiny with Taken King, and I enjoyed it. I get why people were really digging it, but this clicked for me in a way that that didn't. And I was shocked because so much of the criticism of the Destiny beta has been like, oh, it's more of the same. And I feel like I'm seeing that leveled from a lot of people who played like 300 hours of Destiny.
Yeah.
And like, it's at that point, it's, you're like a wine aficionado, right? Like everything is going to be like super, super precise.
That game, it's so, I think that's such a whack like thing. I guess all criticisms are whatever, but
yeah,
that game is hooks. It is a series of hooks that pull you along a thing. And right now we don't know what those hooks feel like. Destiny 1 was a very fun, solid feeling game when it came out that I beat the story of and then stopped playing because the hooks were shitty as hell when the game started. And then those hooks got good, and all of a sudden there was stuff to do, and there was meaningful progression, and there was a reason for me to like play with my friends every night and like grind for shit to try and get better stuff and higher up hooks. And like, that is all that is the story of that game. And right now we know some details about how that shit works, but we won't know until we are a long ways into playing it, and we sort of understand the like progression systems and the like how gear gets allocated and like what we're going to be spending our, right now I feel like we know what we're going to be spending our first 20 hours doing in Destiny. I played Destiny 1 for hundreds and hundreds of hours, and I don't know what that is going to look like in Destiny 2 yet.
Totally.
Yeah. There was one moment specifically, another one I wanted to call out, where you had to shoot some turbines. And
did everybody on Earth have trouble with this? I swear to God, I see, and this is not me fucking toot my own horn, but like they're apparently patching that out in the final version of the game. What? I didn't think it was that hard.
No, I didn't have a problem with it. I think what I wanted to say before that was that it actually required you to think. Like, you actually had to think. Yeah. Like, and that is so not Destiny. Like, oh wait a minute, I gotta think about how I'm gonna do this. Huh. Okay. Well
it is in raids. I mean, that's what they were trying to do.
Like, I was shooting it over and over again thinking, this is Destiny, this should work. I don't have that many methods of interacting with my environment. I'm just shooting where it tells me to shoot. But this, you actually had to like be kind
shoot
of
it
smart
in a different way.
I think that is so spot on. And I think that is, that's probably the thing that I couldn't think of that makes me think of Halo.
Yeah, like attacking like that big scarab.
Yeah,
in Halo,
just
and finding
world
the weak points
is,
and stuff.
Yeah, that you're part of the world and it's not just a static backdrop.
I have another game I want to talk about for honorable mention.
Okay,
go.
Yeah, and this, Justin recommended this to me, and I really, really loved it. And it's old, so apologies, but it's called Hidden My Game by Mom! Exclamation point.
Yes.
I thought we might have talked about this on a show, but
I think we might have.
It's super good. It's on iPhone. The premise is that your mom has hidden your Nintendo DS looking like console. You have to like click to find it, but if you accidentally click on mom, you lose. And mom hides in cabinets, and sometimes there's an alligator that you have to prop his mouth open and get your Game Boy. It's just really charming and great and free and worth downloading on iPhone
and
probably
sequel,
Android.
The sequel is out now, and I know we haven't talked about the sequel. So
I haven't talked about that. I haven't played the sequel.
It's also out. It's basically the same thing, except more and funny. It's really,
it just gets so creative.
Yeah,
it's really impressive.
Silly and some like good meta jokes in there and stuff like that. I thought it was great. It was really good.
Go ahead, Justin.
There was another little iOS thing I want to mention called Flipping Legends, and it is published by Noodle Cake. I don't know if the Stickman Golf folks, I don't think it's developed by them, but it's a really neat sort of endless runner where rather than run straight along, you're flipping across a 3-square wide grid that's sort of laid out in a checkerboard pattern. So if you're on a black, and you're flipping diagonally all the time, so if you're on a black square, you're always going to flip to a black square, and when you flip across like off the 3x3 grid, then you'll land on a white square. So that's how you get back and forth between them. And enemies are laid out in a pattern on the squares, and your health is constantly draining, and you refill your health by killing enemies. So it's really a sort of pattern recognition and almost sort of a rhythm game in the way that you like get the faster you can go through and hit as many guys as possible. You have like a combo for hitting them in sequence, and the faster you can sort of flip through, the more points you get, and the farther you'll get sort of in the levels. And there are really that's sort of the basis, but there's really interesting like ideas built onto it in that that are strange for this genre. Like there are character classes that each independently level up and have very different special abilities that can that make the game feel very different. It's a really neat little thing that I've sunk a lot of time into that I really kind of dug. It's a great like kill 60 seconds kind of thing.
The new Layton game on iOS and Android is also very good. It's like $17, but it is it's a fucking full Layton game. Like
there any like in-app purchasing?
No, it's just a game. Yeah. Which I find very refreshing because I love those games, but like I don't always got my 3DS. I played it a lot while we were like traveling during Comic-Con, and it is just a full ass Layton game, and I like it.
You go ahead, Plant. You haven't talked about.
I'm gonna make this really quick, but I have a trio of things, so I'll keep them really, really short. The first is Nex Machina, which is Super Stardust people teamed up with the original Robotron creator, I believe, and made a twin stick shooter that is unbelievably polished and good. Kingsway is a role-playing game that takes place in the environment of like a Windows-like operating system. So you are using Windows to travel across this world and then like storing your
like
items
in
folders. It's really, really, really conceptual and very, mm-hmm. very well made. And then the last thing is a thing. This is like literally just my recommendation to Justin in case he hasn't played it yet. Justin, have you heard of Vostok Inc.?
No.
Oh my gosh.
So my show.
So it is a clicker game with a twin stick shooter. And when you blow up things as the 2D ship, you get money, which you then use to build things on planets, which is a clicker game.
What platform is this on?
It is on
PC,
PS4, Xbox One, and Vita.
I was going to say,
Justin,
he's
going to
play
the
whole entire recording.
It's weird. This month was like, in some ways it felt slow, and then there are just like all these weird small games that came out right towards the end.
Hey, did we talk about Mass Effect Andromeda at all in any way? Like, did we even discuss
it?
I think we did in a brief.
I just wanted to say real quick, I made a go of it, because like, there was a part of me that thought like, man, how bad could a Mass Effect game be? And it is really, it's frustrating in a way that I didn't expect it to be frustrating, in that all the systems are really crappy and none of them worked. They're all like so confusing that I don't know how they broke it, but like the basic stuff, like some of the story stuff is nice and it controls well, but like the basics of like building and exploring and all that stuff are just terrible. And it's so frustrating. And I really thought that I'd be able to like, if I heard that if you just blew past a lot of the side stuff and kept focused on the main thing, that you could have some fun with it. But Hachimachi, like after almost every single system requires you to look up a guide somewhere because it's so poorly explained and laid out and organized, and the UI is horseshit. Like I know that like it's not new to say like Andromeda is unenjoyable, but I really thought that I'd be able to like wring something out of it, and I just absolutely could not, which bummed me out because there was many times I was like sort of enjoying playing it, but all those systems are just so crummy and it's really depressing, and don't play Mass Effect Andromeda.
Womp womp.
There you go.
But maybe Anthem would be good though, I bet.
Could be. Casey's back.
Casey's back in the mix. Getting wild. We'll see. I can start if you want.
Sure.
My game is Miitopia on the 3DS, which full transparency I got today. but there's a demo out right now on 3DS, and the demo is just the beginning of the game, and you can just import your save from the demo into the final version. So I've probably played between that and the full version of the game a couple hours, which this is an RPG, so that is not a lot of time, and I do not know like how the experience will necessarily evolve, but I wanted to bring it because I think there's actually a lot of really cool stuff going on. It is a game where you play as Miis, and there have been a lot of those, and most of them have been not so great. Like I was excited for Tomodachi Life because it was sold as like Animal Crossing, but with Miis, but the game wasn't really there so much. And then obviously like Miitomo wasn't very good, and all of the like 3DS sort of Street Pass games are, yeah. Some of them are kind of fun. And
there is a lot of similarity with the RPG Street Pass game with this.
Kind of. The problem is that I assumed this, because this is a $30 game, right? And so I assumed that that was just going to be like Find Me, the Street Pass game, which is very, very, very lightweight.
Yes.
But there is a lot more to Miitopia, and that's kind of why I wanted to bring it and talk to it. So it's in this fantasy world, and the game starts and you pick your Mii. It's really smart. It kind of pulls Miis from two sources, and also at any time you can make a custom Mii for any character that you want to, or it will sort of scan your 3DS and I guess your like Nintendo account and what it is linked to, and it will for instance, it like had my Tomodachi Life save, and I don't really know how it got that, and so I could pull any of the Miis that I used or made in Tomodachi Life. It had all my friends on there. It had all the Miis that I made in Mii Maker that, like, I guess came with me from the Wii. Like, yeah. I had a lot of Miis to choose from because I played a few of these types of games before. And then there is a Mii Central where people's custom Miis will sort of be populated in this big long list. And whenever you turn the game on, if you're connected to the internet, before you start playing, it will ask you to like vote on some fan creations on which ones you like. And so it sort of populates that list with like only really fucking good Alf and like a billion anime characters and Mario and Luigi and Zelda and a bunch of Nintendo characters.
I got
and
Gabe Newell was in
the
my
Gabe
game.
Newell one was very impressive, and so like that is very cool too. So you will use those Miis. There's your main character, and then other party members that you come across, you can customize them and choose who they are. There are citizens of these different towns that you'll come across. The main like bad guy of the game, you give them a face, and like various characters. And the game is about this like big evil warlord who rips everybody's faces off and then puts them on monsters, and you have to go kill the monsters and get the faces
rips
back.
Rips is probably more dramatic than it is. I mean,
he tears
sort
the
of magically
sinews of the flesh, and and then it is your quest with your party of four sort of adventurers to go out and like get the faces back and fulfill these quests for folks in town and like explore and get treasure and level up and stuff. So, like, on paper, that's what it is, but there's some really, really cool systems. For one thing, whenever you make a character out of a Mii, you choose their personality, and there's personalities like calm and kind and energetic and stubborn, and then those personalities have lots of different ways that they manifest. So, like, if you play a kind character, then maybe they'll jump in the way of a fatal attack for another person. Or they will, if somebody's like out of healing items, they'll give them one of their own. But each characteristic also has a negative side effect. So the kind one is sometimes your kind character will like, you'll have an enemy on the ropes and your kind character will just spare them. So they get to leave and you don't get anything out of the whole fight. And then on top of that, there are different classes, and the classes are a mix of like fantasy stuff like knight and mage, with some weirder stuff like chef and pop star. And those all have like different implications. And then there's a whole relationship system in the game. So there are, you basically like, you move through the world by hopping into these little nodes, and then the node will walk you down a path. And at certain points you can like choose between different junctions in the path to like take harder or easier routes, which you'll make those decisions based on like how many resources you have right now. And then at the end of each path, you reach an inn, and at that inn you can like eat to increase your stats or give money to your characters who will run out and buy stuff that they want. Which is a really sometimes very charming, sometimes infuriating system where, like, I see fucking, you know, Guy Fieri, my mage, and he's like, hey, I'm going to go buy this robe. Give me 200 gold pieces. And I'm like, here you go, Guy Fieri. And he comes back. And he's like, oops, I bought one banana instead. It's like, fucking Guy Fieri.
Here's the change back.
And then you... You can, like, but in the end, you can, like, choose which Miis are roommates, and then they will grow closer. Whenever they do, like, I mentioned the kind trait where, like, somebody jumps in front of the wave of fatal attack. When they do that, the two people, their relationship gets closer. Or they give somebody an item with the kind trait, and their relationship gets closer. Or as a cleric, you heal somebody, and they are appreciative, and your relationship gets closer. But there's also things that will make your relationship fall apart. And as your, like, relationship levels up, that also unlocks unique abilities. There's, like... there's a lot of stuff. There's like
it's very deep.
What makes you fall apart?
Stuff like, so like a stubborn character might just refuse to like act. And then people are like, fuck this, fuck you, I'm out of here.
What a D.
There's attacks that are these powerful AoE attacks that hit all of the enemies, but they will also hit your friends. And so that will cause your relationship to suffer.
The vibe that I got from the game was sort of like I got a tearaway vibe in the sense that like you feel like you have a lot of control over the world as it populates and like feels very personalized for you, which I liked a lot. Also got, because the relationship stuff, kind of like a Fire Emblem-y thing. I don't know how you feel, because again, like I was just playing the demo. You're still only like a couple hours in. For me, I don't know that this is a game I could play for 10 hours or even 5. Like, even though it has, like, they clearly have a lot of layers of depth to it, it seems hard to like, I kind of, like, once I had the hook, the gimmick, as it were, the, like, didn't find that the RPG systems were so engaging that I, like, needed to keep playing.
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah,
I had a system
where you could hold in B to fast forward, and always needed to be that. Like,
yes. Yeah.
I do not need to see these doofuses like running left to right and spouting nonsense.
But even then, there's like cool systems where like the first time that a characteristic trait activates, or you use one of your new class powers, or you do anything for the first time in battle, it kind of slows down time and that fast forward state to like show you this is what that is, this is what it looks like, this is what it's doing. And then in the future, after that first time, it doesn't slow it down anymore. So like even there, I usually am fast forwarding also, but that's just because like that's usually how I play RPGs. There's also like just a lot of charm to the game, and this is sort of Tomodachi Life-esque in that just there are constantly these little cutscenes happening while you're walking down the road where like you'll be offered choices, or two characters will like talk to each other and their relationship will get stronger. There's just like a lot of constant sort of just little interstitials like that that I'm really enjoying. I don't think it's the deepest game in the world. And I've been looking forward to it mainly because, like we said, it is kind of a slow time, and I've been looking for like a game I can like really sink my teeth into. And I've played it for a couple hours now, and I think I'll probably keep on going.
I gotta say, it would be so nice if it was on mobile.
I was thinking the same thing, or Switch for that matter.
Sure, yeah, like, that would be fine.
I have a ton of friends on Switch.
I thought it was very cute, though. I don't know why Russ feels compelled to brag, but.
I have so many friends and everyone loves me on Switch. and they say I'm cool and quitting my mom. Says I'm really cool.
Wait, you're quitting your mom?
I said even my mom thinks I'm cool.
Sorry.
Oh, including your mom. Got it.
Including my mom, yeah.
What next?
I'll go.
Okay.
Great.
So the game that I'm bringing is a game called The End Is Nigh. It is a platforming game by Edmund McMillan and a gentleman named Tyler G, and I'm forgetting his last name. Sorry, Tyler. Mm. So Edmund, people know his work from Super Meat Boy is like the biggest one.
Tyler Glael.
Oh, or Glael, thank you.
Glael.
Yes.
Some.
Edmund made Super Meat Boy and Binding of Isaac, which were like two of his biggest titles.
I got that on Switch, by the way. It's still a good fucking game.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Really holds up. And End Is Nigh is very similar to Super Meat Boy in the sense that it's like a very traditional platformer, but with modern controls. So the premise is you survive the apocalypse as like a ball of ash. I think your name is literally Ash. And you are hunting the world for tumors, in this case, to find and build a friend out of tumors. And how that sort of presents in the game is a series of like tricky, increasingly difficult platforming sequences that are like single screen, like not like tricky in the sense that there's a lot of mechanics going on, but tricky in the sense of like tricky jumps and stuff like that. And this whole world is like presented as very dark, but it's backed by like a really cool score of remixed fair use stuff, stuff like Hall of the Mountain King and a few other ones that are like, you know, classical staples, but sort of redone with kind of a heavy metal bent to them. And I mean, for me, like I love like Spelunky and Meat Boy and stuff like that. I love really tough platforming games because I like the feeling of like you're constantly getting better as you learn a map or as you learn the challenge. And I think from a design standpoint, you know, Edmund is like very well honed in terms of designing levels and like teaching you a mechanic and then sort of altering that mechanic slightly and adding new variables to it. And I've really enjoyed it. It came out on Steam, I want to say about 2 or 3 weeks ago, but it's also coming to Switch and PS4. So I think it'll be great on Switch. I think that's like a perfect home for it. And PS4, it'll be good too. But
I was shocked how different it felt than Super Meat Boy. Because when really, I saw it, it looked identical.
Yes.
But the game is a lot... It's weird because I think Super Meat Boy, especially as it goes on, requires a tremendous amount of skill and precision.
Yeah.
But this game from the very beginning, I feel like requires more... because the difference is you can't really just like bounce around the side of walls like you can in Super Meat Boy. There are hooks,
right?
And you use hooks to get around the environment, but also there's
like
of,
a ledge grab.
Yeah, it's like a ledge grab, but only it's all ledges, and then also these hooks that come out of walls. But then yep. You also have a long jump that is used off of hooks that gets you to places you might not expect. Or that look like they might be too far away. And I found pretty quickly that, I don't know, the skill curve felt like it shot up fast. Not that that's bad at all.
Yeah.
But I felt like with Super Meat Boy, I was doing pretty well for a long time. Or there was a little more room for error. Where here, it got... hard or difficult very quickly.
As somebody who definitely has a skill cap with those games and enjoyed like a good portion of Meat Boy, I will say that like for me personally, it got hard too fast. Like I really didn't have this period where I felt like, oh, I'm having fun with this because I'm increasing in skill. It just felt very antagonistic from the beginning. And like if you're somebody who is looking for that, I completely kind of I can see why that would be refreshing. Like if you're coming straight off of Meat Boy into this, that's probably where from a skill level like you need to be at. But for me, it got hard so fast that I don't feel like I had a period where I felt like I was improving or was really enjoying myself. There was a lot of times where like I could see the jump that needed to happen and just like couldn't get it to time out right, and after about 20 tries it's like, okay, I'm gonna find something else to do. But so again, what's interesting, not specific to the game, just me personally.
Yeah, totally. What's interesting, it's like it's a very nuanced difference between this and Super Meat Boy that like kind of requires like a lot of obsessive platforming care. So Meat Boy is like a very analog platforming game. You hold down run, you have like a lot of air control. You can sort of like edge jumps in like different ways that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Like there's a little like more give and take in terms of like where you're going to land from a jump. Whereas this is very locked down. There's no run button. So if you do a long jump, the long jump will always 100% land you in the exact same spot every single time. Which is interesting because for me that actually made the game easier because I knew there was like no sort of like, oh, my hand, you know, moved the analog stick at the wrong time at the last second. So I didn't like go off course, but it also kind of, I don't know. It made it feel more closer to like a rhythm game in the sense because I knew exactly what was going to happen whenever I hit a given button for the most part. and it kind of took some of the guesswork out of what would ordinarily be like a much harder platformer. But you know, I can totally see the other side. It makes sense that it would be like very intimidating for a lot of people. It also doesn't, I don't think it does a good job of rewarding you for progressing through the game as well as Meat Boy did. Meat Boy had a lot of things like bandages that unlock new characters and like crazy themed secret levels. And this has like very, very hard arcade levels that are themed as well. But there's no, as far as I'm aware, there's no unlockable characters. And that sort of makes it a little more grindy to get through it. But the platforming stuff alone was enough for me.
Yeah, so. I definitely also think, like, I feel like the world kind of put me off. It was not, I wasn't like, part of the enticement with games like that is that, like, want to see what really comes next. And because of the post-apocalyptic thing, like, I just was not that interested in, because it was all so kind of crummy, you know, I was not that interested in where else I was going to be able to sort of see and explore.
Yeah, I think the later worlds get more interesting to look at pretty noticeably, but I agree, like, starting with just, like, pretty familiar, dark, broken buildings, post-apocalyptic thing is not the best place to start.
It looks almost exactly like Cannibalt.
Yeah, the first levels, that's true. It does kind of have that
vibe. Like, it uses that four-color palette sort of.
Yeah.
Similarly. Yeah.
What should we talk about in halftime? Because I think we talked about Destiny.
Yeah, can we just edit Hello? The Destiny?
Oh. I don't even know which one this fucking
is. What is that supposed to be?
Hello, it is I.
Wait, is it Jean-Baptiste? Jean-Baptiste, yeah, yes.
I don't remember Jean-Baptiste quite sounding like that, what? But all right.
Wow, Hello. It's been so long.
So long, but not long enough in like a different way.
What is going on, besties?
Wait, so I'm sorry.
I really don't think this is Jean-Baptiste. I think this is one of Russ's other characters doing a prank call.
I think there might be a reason this is Jean-Baptiste. Did the last time we see Jean-Baptiste, he got pushed out a window?
Yes, but that was fine.
Okay.
Is this just no problem? I don't know if you guys remember, I am an independent developer from Canada.
Uh-huh. Canada.
I need you to understand, Jean-Baptiste. Anywhere you said there, where you were from, it was going to be slanderous and hurtful towards whatever Canada. Kind nation you claim to hail from.
Where in Canada are you from?
The eastern part.
I don't own this. Uh-huh. I don't own any of this. Do not tweet at me. Please tweet it.
Newfoundland? Like that sort of...
Thereabouts. Okay. Yes.
Does this mean you speak French?
Oui.
Uh huh. And what else do you know from that beautiful language?
Oh, there are follow up questions.
I guess my only one is, what are you doing? Why would you be here? And
I am here
you?
In America. Thank you for asking, Griffin. I am here in America for an exploration on game design. I have been in Chicago. Uh-huh. Have you been to Chicago?
Yeah, I lived there for a while. It was nice.
It was nice, yes. I was invited there to exhibit my game.
Hmm. What was that game?
It is a game... Well, it is a game about walking around and seeing creatures and hugging them and capturing them and bringing them home with you.
Uh-huh.
That sounds good to me. That's actually tickling all my sensibilities. Jean, please tell me more about the game.
Sure. Well, you walk around and you can open any door you would like, and the creatures are in behind doors, and then they will leap into your phone. It is a phone game.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been...
God, I just realized what he's doing.
A big success.
Wait, really? Wait, you just realized?
Yeah, it took me
a
second.
It has been such a success. Uh-huh. It is my first big success, and I wanted all of the fans to come and experience it with me in Chicago.
Interesting. I hate to ask, but what's the name of this game?
This is Pokemon Goes.
Is it the type
it
of beer?
It was localized as Pokemon Go in America, but okay. It is Pokemon Goes.
From the French.
From French. French. Goes means, I'll translate, Goes means to capture or to hug.
Okay, great.
I like that then a lot.
It's weird that those are synonymous. That must be a very confusing country to live in.
It is. You never know if you're going to jail or if you're getting married.
Right.
We showed the game in Chicago, and everyone seemed so excited about it. There was so much yelling and excitement about it.
I saw that. And there was a video of them shouting, like, we can't play, because they were, like, so excited for the game. And what you didn't hear, that video was doctored, and it was them saying, we can't wait to play. And yeah. That was...
Yes. Well, they had been playing all morning, and then the second the video went up, we turned it off just to see what they would do. Because that's the magic of game design, is you control the experience.
It's a sort of human experimentation as well.
Yes, you know, I would love to hear more about the game, but I mean, Pokemon Go or Goes has been such a huge success financially.
Yes.
This must mean that you have a wealth that you didn't have before.
Oh, yes. I get $33 each month from Nintendo.
That's a small amount. Nice. That's not a very big amount of money.
No, that is a success. They say this is large percentage of overall game
is that
income.
American dollars or Canadian dollars?
This is American. Yeah, Canadian, it's 87.
I'm sorry, do you have a cold? Is something wrong?
Yes, I'm a little ill because there was water flying at me in Chicago.
Rain?
A little bit.
They call it rain. Oh, from the sky or
no,
from people?
It was from the land.
Land water.
I did not know where it was coming from, and then I looked down and it was coming from mouths, which might just be a cultural difference that I'm not familiar with.
I'm sorry, are you melting and your voice is going from soprano to baritone?
Is it exhausting just speaking in that ridiculous voice, John?
I have been traveling so very often in the plains and the air it's hard. It's hard on my internals.
Buddy, I hope you get the rest you need as you leave this call.
Yes.
Immediately, and we're so happy you could stop by.
Can you buy more gold coins?
Yeah, we'll do our
best. I'll get some Ultra Balls if you
coins.
Yeah, I'll get them right now if you just leave.
Okay, I'm turning the crank on the servers right now. They'll be up in a second.
Is that what happened? You were at the event and you're like, who's cranking the servers?
Oh, you shouldn't have worn sleeves. It's getting so close to that crank.
Oh no, I'll cut them off. Goodbye.
Okay, bye, John. God, what a treat. I really forgot that guy existed. Now he does again. Who wants to go next?
Of the deep well of characters who could have come by, I didn't think Jean-Baptiste was going to be the one to get the reboot so soon.
Yeah, so happy he could stop by.
Me too.
Plant, you want to talk about your game?
Sure. Yeah, I'll talk about a game called Splatoon 2. It is like Splatoon 1. Almost entirely, but
only people played this one.
Yeah, that would be the huge difference. So to catch everybody up, I guess Mr. Miyamoto himself was like, I want to make a shooter, but I don't want to make people shoot people. That will not be the priority. And then he's like, what if I imagine he was playing Tony Hawk at the time. And he's like, hey, this graffiti mode's pretty good. What if we made that into a Nintendo game?
You don't think it was Mark Gecko's Getting Up?
No, that was after Tony Hawk. Don't give Mark Echo credit for the work of the Birdman.
His personal work coding his video game?
He wouldn't put his name on it if he didn't do all of the work.
If he didn't code it entirely himself.
Obviously. So, teams of four, the goal is to paint the most of the environment and the maps you're on, and you can also, like, splat your other little squid friends. Do I have to explain the basics of how Splatoon works? People get
paints.
It?
Okay.
Well,
I got it.
You are describing just the turf war mode in the standard play. There's other modes, like a King of the Hill sort of capture the zone style mode. And some other.
Yeah, and that's like the big change. There's single player now that is pretty good. Good enough to keep you entertained on a flight when you don't have an internet connection. There are bosses that I think are pretty charming, but there's only four or five of them.
I just finished I 100% of the single player. I got fucking into it. It's very good.
I think it feels so bad. Like, compared to playing against people, I think it is so unpleasurable. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't love the single player either.
I come somewhere in the middle. But anyway, the thing.
You know what it is? It's navigating the world in the way that you have to navigate the world feels bad to me in a single player game, and having to like paint to go faster, like all that kind of garbage, like feels really crummy to me. I it makes so much sense in the multiplayer, and it's such a cool way of like moving your territory forward, and but then the single player, it's just like, it's just me here.
Well, I like it because there's lots of like environmental puzzle stuff in some of the later levels that you like have to figure out, like where do I put the paint in order to like build myself a launch pad that I can squid jump from one part to the other. Like, I think there's a lot of like sophistication to it in some of the later parts.
Anyway. Yeah,
I agree. I am a big fan of the multiplayer. I love that the game has this ability to reward people who, if your team's in the pits and you just really want to like get the other team uncomfortable and you're fast, you can cut across the map and get into the other team's zone. And if you're okay at the game, really, really wreck shit and completely throw the team off in a way that I find really enjoyable. That reminds me more of like a sport, like a traditional sport, than it does like a shooter. Where you're the ball is going back and forth across the field, and there are just so many fun ways to break up the pace, or a team can basically be dominating 1 second and then be just completely thrown off their game the next. But the thing that I want to talk about that I surprisingly am enjoying the most is Salmon Run, which is the like
horde mode. Oh yeah, you put it online.
Yeah, it's a horde mode, and you can play with again up to 4 people, I believe. And it's, I mean, like any traditional horde mode. The big difference being there are a bunch of small enemies, and then there are how many? 5, 6 bosses?
Eight. I think there's
eight.
7 or 8.
Eight
bosses,
okay.
Yeah.
And all of them have different methods of how you destroy them. There's like one tiny creature, but it has tons of plates stacked on its back, and you have to remove all the plates before you can blow it up. There's, I think it's a salmon that there's a big marker on the ground right before it pops up. And if you don't drop a bomb there so it comes up and eats that, it'll eat you and just wreck you. There are 2 giant recycling bins that float in the air. There are all sorts of different things. And it has a level of creativity and weirdness that I'm like shocked it's a Nintendo game. Like,
well, no, but if you look at Nintendo games without the context of having played them for 30 years,
yeah, but
they
I guess
are
that's the thing
shit.
Is I can't remember the last time I saw something new like this. I like ARMS a lot. It's not weird in the way that this is like weird in like a Ren and Stimpy sort of way.
Do you mean Splatoon as a whole or just the mode?
Just this mode.
Okay.
Salmon Run. I mean, Splatoon as a whole is also weird in a design point of view that it's so cool and interesting and
you're talking about
actually
the aesthetic of these like wild
the
looking like fish monsters running up and trying to beat you to death with like frying pans. It's very it is cartoonish, and I'm not saying that to describe like the game's color palette. It is like it is like watching a cartoon in a way.
It's like the Rabbids.
Yeah.
God. You did say you couldn't believe it was a Nintendo game, but we should talk about the fact that the deployment of Splatoon Run is a very Nintendo ass bad decision.
Yeah.
Not Splatoon, Salmon Run.
Do you want to walk through how much of a mess that is?
So I kind of get where they're coming from. There is a progression and a loot cycle to Splatoon 2's online multiplayer where like there's shops and those shops update every day. And when you buy gear at shops, it has like perks that you can unlock on them that like change your, you know, speed or your how much ink you use when you use your weapons and all kinds of like different modifiers.
But none of that carries over to the other modes. We should mention.
Yes, right.
So single player has separate progression loops. Then multiplayer has separate progression loops.
But you mentioned that before I started playing the game. The single player and the Salmon Run do feed back into the multiplayer. You can unlock shit in those modes that you will then use in single player. So
I didn't know single player did that.
Yeah. So the in Salmon Run, it only works for I think the time they have it set to, and maybe this is the biggest problem, is 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. I think Pacific time. Every other day. I'm pretty sure that's what the schedule is. I could be wrong there. The idea is this, right? In every one of those sessions, you have a pay grade that increases as you complete missions and don't die. If your team ever wipes out, in a salmon run mission, then it's over and you lose. But if you can complete missions in a row, then your pay grade increases, your rank increases. Your pay grade affects like how many points, like rank up points you get from a mission. So the higher your pay grade, the more you'll pull down for a successful mission. And then at the end of a, I guess, day, I could be 100% wrong on this, but I think this is how it works. At the end of a day, your like rank determines what prizes you get from that. So maybe it's an exclusive shirt that has some different stuff on it. There are little gashapon balls that have like different bonuses, like experience point increases or money increases for the multiplayer mode.
Sure.
I think what they are going for roughly in terms of feel is Iron Banner, which is a monthly thing in Destiny where you play this like special mode of PvP and then you can unlock this exclusive gear and it is an exciting thing. Problem is, it's not infrequent enough for it to carry that kind of excitement, I think. It's really just mm-hmm. like, oh, it's not on today. Fuck. And the other big problem is it's literally the best thing in the game. And I want right. to do it all the time.
It doesn't yeah. make any sense to me at all, like, why they would lock. Because it's in the game. You can play it at any time you want locally. You can play Salmon Run whenever you like. The only time to play it online is when it's, quote, active. And for the life of me, I cannot see an upside. There's actually a bunch of shit in this game that I cannot see an upside to, and maybe fans of Splatoon in this podcast can explain to me a few of those things.
I mean, some things aren't just Nintendo things. Like,
no, okay, no, that's not. I don't agree. I'll give you an example, and plenty of has been said about this, but let's talk about it again. The fucking TV show at the beginning of every time you load the game that you have to sit through, and they tell you what the maps are, and there's some fun puns, but you have to sit through it every time. There's no way to skip it, and it makes me want to throw my Switch out the window. The other thing I agree with you is a Nintendo thing, which is when you're playing a multiplayer game in modern multiplayer, like PUBG, Destiny, you name it, the primary number one thing that people want to do is play against randoms with their friends, right? To do it in Splatoon is a nightmare. Nick, who is a very... like has played a lot of Nintendo games. I've played a lot of Nintendo games. We had a crew of four people getting everyone into the same match, like as like a quote party, was next to impossible due to a number of factors, not the least of which was the chat program that they've released is absolute total dog shit. So we moved to Discord, which is a very capable app and it handles things fine. And that's what I'd recommend if you're playing Splatoon online. But getting people, like, there's just no, until I think you're ranked like B minus and you're playing like ranked matches, there's no way to be, as a crew of four people, just like take on all comers against like randoms on the internet. It's just not an option.
That's wild.
I think there is.
I think there is if you rank up and get into ranked league play, whatever the fuck it's called, and then you can make a team before you match up against people. But before that, there is not. All you can
There's a friends battle thing that doesn't let you make a party.
Well, you can do a friends battle, but you can't play people online. You can only do private matches if you do friends battle.
There's other stuff
or
like
not, I should say, you can play people online, but you can only do like 2v2. You can't like play randoms online.
There's other whack stuff like the fact that you have to back out the menu to change your weapon.
That's pretty bad.
Like that really stinks. Yeah. It's like if you're in a flow and you're playing and you're in a pretty good groove and then you have like to leave the whole thing to go change your weapon, like that, and especially
or anything,
it can
like any of your loadout.
A good long while sometimes to get into a match. I've had a couple where like 3 minutes of waiting and it still timed out and it didn't work and it didn't find me a group of people to play with, and that's like
I've been reading
a few
books.
Times like yeah, exactly. That's good, it's reawakened the love of literacy.
Yeah,
but like that's weird. There and there's other like my yeah. I'll tell you one of my Splatoon issues, a good one first. I like how short the matches are. It keeps you from getting too invested in what's happening. It's like, oh, okay, I'm just having my fun. But on the flip side of that, I do wish who won and lost every game was not a complete and utter surprise to me every single time. I never know. I never have any idea who won. Like every once in a while, if I'm getting like housed, then I can see that line of the opposing team like outside my door. then in those rare cases, I know what happened. But
I think
that
boils down to the communication breakdown, right? Because there's no chat in the game without using the stupid mobile app. And so I've had games like that too, where I get like fucking 9 kills and I'm painting the whole world. Little did I know there were some motherfuckers behind me, like painting up whatever I painted, and my teammates were doing jack shit.
Yeah.
And so I thought I crushed it, and then I get beaten like 20-80, and like I had no idea because my teammates weren't talking to me. It's another thing that like playing with friends and being able to chat with them would be like, hey, the left side of the map is all. Also, you can open up the map at any point to like jump to wherever your teammates are, and that actually gives you a very good indication of like what needs painted. But I think being able to communicate would definitely help that even more.
And there's stuff. The weapon switch also is irritating because, in terms of like being on a team, is also irritating because I've ended up on. I like to use the paint roller because I like being able to like contribute without having to get into a bunch of fights. But I was on a team. I got paired with a team where literally everyone on the team was using paint rollers, and it did not go well. It was not a good sort of team to be on. It would be really nice to be able to switch that to adjust, like to make a good team that has like its bases covered. Would be really nice.
It kind of makes me think that maybe, and this is just speculation, but maybe Nintendo realized that they had like basically nothing coming out in the summer, or at least until like Rabbids, I guess. And I don't know, it feels rushed. It feels like there was a lot of like stuff in this game that just as being a multiplayer game, it just seems crazy to me that it isn't in there.
I kind like of feel like the opposite. This is weird, but I think that they knew all of this stuff long, like far, far in advance. I kind of wonder if Splatoon 1 was rushed and it was like, oh, let's get this rough version of it out and then we can finish it for Splatoon 2. Mm.
But they didn't finish it. They left a bunch of dumb shit on the
I mean, those are, like I said, I'm not. This is not me apologizing for them. This is me saying, like, I think, I don't know if they know they did bad.
I think it's very generous, Russ, to think that Nintendo does know how to do multiplayer very, very good, and they just didn't have time to do it. Like,
it's just like they know game design. They obviously know how game design so fucking well. And if you play a modern day shooter for a half hour, you can just see like so many failings in Splatoon, which is, as a game design game, really good and really enjoyable, and I love the art style and the look of it, but like, I mean, you're right, because if you look at the Switch, it's super bare bones as well. It's like the least they could possibly do for like friends lists and all that stuff, so I swear to get it, but Splatoon is billed as a multiplayer game. It's not billed as a single player game, so to like leave all that shit on the table is just fucking bonkers to me.
I want to put a bow on it and go to the thing that you said about design really quick before we wrap. And I think this is a thing that we talked about weirdly with Watch Dogs 2, which was a game that Justin, I think you had mentioned this. For all of its opportunity, it was not very creative with its weaponry. It talked a lot about non-lethal kills and like being able to use weapons in interesting ways. And then everything was just kind of the same weapons that you would see in any shooter, and I don't think it can be understated how creative Splatoon is and how much it like really makes me think about how lacking in creativity most shooters are in terms of like, if you're going to interact with the world through a gun, hey, this game makes the floor poison. It covers the floor with poison in different ways.
Poison or a rad fucking water slide.
One of those two. And the way that you like slop up your weapon is just, there's so much variety. That is the thing that I think Splatoon 2 does much better than Splatoon 1, is I think the weapons are a lot more creative. There's just more of them. I do wish that you could change on the fly easier, but I think like that kind of almost gets lost. Because it's like, it's a colorful silly game where you paint. But if you think about like, if this didn't look colorful in like a kid's game, it's doing so much stuff with a shooter, and it continues to bum me out that after, what was it, that the studio that did Resistance, Insomniac, I think, did it. Like, there was a time where it felt like there was more creativity happening with what a gun does in a game. And I think, like, for a long time, instead of focusing on that, it's just, oh, we're going to make this gun thing that you're familiar with feel better and better and better. And sometimes I am okay with it not being better, but just being different.
Yeah.
I think Overwatch is probably the best big example of a game point. That does it well.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that a lot of shooters these days kind of like, you know, the battlefields of the world kind of just fall into, well, this is a faster SMG and this is a slower SMG and this is a high-powered rifle,
think,
and they all pretty much
I think
work
it's very
the same.
Telling that whenever I'm almost any time when I'm killed by something in Splatoon, I think, well, of course they have that thing. Look at that. It's a giant paint bucket. They're just dumping paint everywhere. It's way better than what I've got. Especially when you're like starting out, everybody's got like the most bananas paint slinging tech.
I will say, like, I really have been playing a lot of PUBG, although I think I'm finally starting to slow down a little bit. And it is also really, really nice to play a game that is the opposite of that in virtually every way. Like 3 minutes and then it's over, low stakes. I'm good at it. Which is very novel. Like it, I honestly play it while I'm like waiting for the plane to spawn in. Like it is. I feel like every time we talk about a Switch game, I could talk about this. Like, oh yes, well everybody's you know, praises and criticisms are fair, but we should also talk about the fact that like just playing a game on the Switch fucking owns. It is the it's the best shit ever. I get home and I play it on my TV and it looks great and I use the Pro controller and it feels really good and I go get on an airplane and I play it for 3 hours. Like, it's amazing.
It's great.
Brief tag onto that. I did just get Overcooked, which just comes out on Switch like today.
Oh yes.
Or tomorrow.
What's that?
And that's like a perfect
Justin.
Example.
It's so Justin. Good.
It's a cooking, top-down cooking game. It's kind of like, imagine like a really good Mario Party mini game where there's four people running around like carrying pots and chopping vegetables and like trying to coordinate to like deliver food really quickly. I realize it sounds really shitty when
it's
I
so
describe
good.
It, but
Griffin
it's
and I
great.
Had a very complex night.
Yeah, we play that with our friends. It's up to four players, and so like one person can go and chop stuff and then throw it in a pot, and then another person will like take it out of the pot when it's done cooking, put it in a bowl, and then you got to serve up the bowl, and then you got to wash the dish. That's the basic cycle of it. But then the fucking stages as you go on, it's all of a sudden, instead of being in a kitchen, you are in two trucks that are racing side by side on a freeway, and so you have to like figure out like, okay, I'm gonna throw an onion on your side, you have to catch it, 3, 2, 1, you drop the fucking onion. Or there's one where it's just like you're moving around a track where nobody can pass one another because there's just space for one person, and so you have to constantly be thinking in order, like, okay, I'm gonna put the onion down, player two you're gonna chop it, player three you're gonna, oh fuck, you didn't grab it, now I have to run all the way around this track. Like, it is a hysterical, infuriating party game that will make you want to fucking kill your friends.
And it's great for Switch because everyone has two controllers like with the device itself, so it's like super easy to get four players going.
Cool. I'm going to take a moment to talk about Pyre, which is the new game from Supergiant, creators of Bastion and Transistor. And this is very different, maybe even more different than Transistor was from Bastion. This is so basically it's a visual novel cross with sports. In short, you are one of a begins as a triumvirate and then gradually expands of people who are trying to escape a sort of purgatory-like environment, an extremely colorful, beautifully rendered purgatory. And the way you have to do it is to succeed in these eight, what they're called, rites. But the rites are basically a sort of sport where each team has a goal and you're trying to take a celestial orb and jam it into the opposing team's goal until you douse their pyre, their flame. And that's the basics, but there's a lot more layered onto that. You can throw the ball, and the further you throw it, the more points you get. You can basically dunk, which is jump at a length and slam it in. Bigger, slower players tend to douse the flame more, so there's kind of a risk reward there. And a lot of the players who are characters that you meet in the world and recruit onto your squad have different abilities. There's a little imp that can fly around and is harder to hit and that kind of thing. But the gameplay for that is very enjoyable and neat and interesting and multi-layered. The unusual thing about it is that it is kind of a rarity in the game itself. The vast majority of the time, you're traveling from
like in between the rights, and you are talking to the people on your crew. There's these completely optional conversations at almost every time your little wagon stops, that you can go inside the wagon and talk to somebody. And your choices with them sometimes have a gameplay impact. Sometimes you've got a branching path and different characters want you to go different ways, and you get rewards based on which ones you choose. Sometimes just the conversations themselves can make the players faster in the next game, or make them play better in different ways, which is interesting. It's an interesting way of like layering it on. And even when you are in the rights themselves, if you lose, the game doesn't stop. It just sort of continues the story on from that point. And the characters are all really sharply written and interesting. And you kind of like it, they ingratiate themselves to you really quickly. There's another really smart thing that it does that I want every sort of visual novel from now to the end of time to do, where key terms, things that would be in a glossary, you can highlight and explains to you what they are. So like you don't have to keep track of all the mythology. You can just kind of highlight it and see like, oh, right, that was that guy who did that thing. I remember there's now.
Can I address that in particular?
There's some VNs that do that. It's very, very cool, but this was not the... That's like I also want to
address that in particular, because I didn't play a ton. I played about an hour. So here's the thing. I'm a big Supergiant fan. I loved Bastion. I didn't love Transistor as much, but I liked it. But in both of those cases, I thought they used story very carefully, in the sense of like, these are obviously very weird worlds that you're being introduced to, with like a lot of backstory and a lot of like history, but they're smart insofar as they very slowly introduce you to the world you're in, to the characters you're in, etc. And by the end, you feel like you have a pretty good handle on these worlds, but like for the first hour or so, you're like completely lost. And in this game, they like start right from the jump with like a lot of talking and a lot of like highlighting things to figure out what they are. And if I'm honest, it kind of feels a little bit like lazy writing to rely on footnotes to explain like what this town is called, rather than sort of doing that in the writing itself, if that makes sense.
I'd rather make that optional, though, like rather than make you have to reread. And it doesn't give you more than is in the story. The things in there are communicated to you elsewhere. It's just to be able to remind, like, for example, there's a character called Sandalwood who is some sort of informant for your group. And before you like learn more about Sandalwood early on, when you highlight its name, it basically says it's some sort of informant for them. You don't know more than that. So like, you're only getting information.
I felt like early on I was getting additional information from those tooltips about towns and stuff like that.
Maybe. I mean, that may be the case. I would say, broadly speaking, though, it's pretty good about the deep lore stuff that you would already know, I appreciated being able to, like, dig. Because, like, I don't always care. Like, yeah, it's fine, whatever.
Right.
The Goobly Woods. Yeah, I'll just go there and get the thing I need to get, right? I do kind of wish there was more of the game part of the game.
The game part was fun. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, the game part's really fun, and I wanted to like experiment more with the different characters and get to play with each of them more, but it's actually kind of so rare. And you have to end up benching people, which is interesting, because sometimes you'll have conversations after the match like, why did you bench me? Because if you play in the rights, it helps you to, you're earning, like, I forget what it's called, but it's basically like experience that you need to leave this, the purgatory that you find yourself in. So people are like upset if you don't play them, which is cool. I just wish there was more of that stuff.
It kind of feels like this would be the third game in like a series where you're like building a world, and the first game would be like a very narrow, like one or two or three character game, and then by the third game they're doing like, oh, this is an interesting spin-off telling this side tale about these people and this weird game that they play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
It just feels like they bit off a lot for this first game.
It's way better than Blitzball, but it feels like the Blitzball of a larger, like, because that's the other thing, is like the world is really cool and the characters are really cool, and I wish there was more to interact with them.
It's also fucking gorgeous.
Oh god,
like
it looks so good.
Like It reminds me, it's like Don Bluthy to a certain extent. And what was the name of that PC RPG that came out? Like, you know what I'm talking about?
The Pillars.
It was like hand drawn. What was it called?
Pillars Banner Saga?
Banner Saga.
I was thinking Banner Saga, yeah. So it kind of looks like that, but like even more polished and just like gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. So like they clearly know presentation really, really well. And I was just kind of bummed that like it wasn't a more, for me at least, it wasn't a more engaging experience to like draw me into the world, the interactivity parts of it.
Yeah, I think that that's completely legit. I do think there are issues with like sort of springing a visual novel on somebody rather than sort of like, which is definitely the situation I found myself in. You know, like I knew the about the sort of sports angle of it, but I didn't know how much of it was that and how much of it was like just story. And I think that like you're not everybody's in the mood for that. And I think that there's definitely a possibility that you could end up feeling like, yeah, you know, I'd kind of like to be playing a video game right now rather than reading. Cause I can get down with that sometimes, but it's not always, what I want, but the mechanics are really cool. I think it's very neat that a studio that is the size of Supergiant, which so many of those studios are really living sort of game to game. I think it's really admirable that they continue to sort of evolve so much, you know, but in between each of the games, like they haven't like gone back to the Bastion well, which I think a lot of people would be happy if they did. And they've continued.
They made an astounding amount of money off Bastion, and that's basically like supported all their creativity since. It's kind of like Castle Crashers in that way, where Castle Crashers made a ton of money, and then
damn, I'd love a new fucking Castle Crashers though.
I know, but they're gonna do other stuff instead.
But why not do a new Castle Crashers? I really like that one.
But it's cool. It is not exactly what I kind of hoped it would be, like, because mechanically I really thought Bastion especially, but also Transistor to a lesser extent, was like so like fun and so mechanical in to, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
I'm kind of missing that, but it's cool.
This was an interesting month.
Yeah, it sure was, wasn't it? I don't.
It's just like a lot of like kind of flawed things. Not bad games, certainly, but like nothing that was like an obvious winner.
I mean, yeah, it's perfect. Can we give it to the Splatoon? Can we give it to the Destiny 2 beta? Because I think that's what I probably had the most fun playing. I think mine was Splatoon 2, but if I'm being completely honest, there wasn't like a bunch of competition.
Yeah.
I think there were a bunch of like small things. I just think, I don't know. It's
Joy,
been such a
like,
good,
typical.
Like wildly good year. It's not that there were, like, July wasn't even slow this year. It was just, it was everybody who was wise to not put their weird, smaller game up against some massive release, pushed them out into the world in July. And that's where we had such a collection of runner-ups, right? Like,
yeah.
It was just a weird month for weird games. I like that. That's a nice way to like,
yeah, for sure.
Nothing wrong with that.
Split the year.
What's up in August? Let's take a look. Somebody dropped a list.
Wait,
in the
we gotta pick an actual winner.
It's like the whole show.
I mean, for me, Splatoon 2, I think.
Yeah.
Point.
It's Splatoon 2.
I think that's fair. I like, for what it is, like, I like it a lot more than I should. You know, I like Splatoon to a lot more than I typically like games of that sort. So
yeah,
I think that's completely fair.
I think when Splatoon hits its heights, the heights are higher than any of the other games in this list. And that's fine.
August looks like this list has fucking Ark Survival Evolved on PS4, Xbox One, and PC.
I think Plant just copied and pasted it.
How is that possible? Agents of Mayhem, Juice, I know you're fucking psyched out of your mind for that one.
Sonic
Mania is a big deal.
Yeah, sure. There's the Uncharted Lost Legacy.
Rabbids.
Oh, fucking
exciting.
Absolver. Shit, yeah. Oh, the next episode's gotta be late because all this shit's coming out August 29th. I gotta get Absolver. Got to play Absolver. That game is so hot. Everybody's Golf. I'm excited for that one. The Mario.
Why is it called Everybody's Golf now?
Not Hotshot. I don't know. Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle was pretty fun when I played it.
Super psyched.
Yeah, there's some good stuff next month.
It is a very good month, and then obviously the rest of the year will be very packed as
Screaming Nightmare.
To revisit our sort of our sort of overarching strategy. The game of the first quarter of the year is Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild.
Breath of the Wild.
The second quarter game is PUBG, correct?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I guess we're in Q3 now, huh?
Yeah, this is Q3. Are we? This is the current Splatoon 2 is the current leader.
Yeah, you in trouble, man, Splatoon 2.
How good? Hey, Nintendo Switch, how good are you? Like,
hey, Switch, how good are you though?
What a can you guys? I was sketchy about this whole thing when it launched, but like, hachi machi, man. What, like, it's gone to must own fast.
Sorry, you dropped out there for me.
It has become a must own console, like, so much faster than I would have imagined. Like, it is, and for me, it's already exceeded the Wii U, I think, pretty handily, which is
wild. A lot of that is indie stuff too. Yeah. People gave me a lot of shit for saying that, but like, indie stuff supports the first year of a console way better because it takes a while for the AAA stuff to come around, so it fills in the blanks, and you have shit like Overcooked, and you have shit like Sonic Mania, and I don't know if Sonic Mania is indie, but
no,
certainly, or like Cave Story or what have you. Like, there's a bunch of shit on that platform, and I love fucking playing it. It's
so fun.
It's everything I wanted.
Nick pointed this out on Twitter and blew my fucking mind. When we have Game of the Year discussions this year, we will be measuring Breath of the Wild against Super Mario Odyssey in the same year.
Yeah, that's
going to
be fucking brutal.
Yeah. It's fucking wild. I can't. Yeah, it's such a good start.
It really is. I'm very excited.
Nintendo should do that more and just have a burner console in between the good ones. So they can like, hey, we've already got some good games that nobody tried. Let's get up on it.
Fucking brilliant.
So that is going to do it for us. Congratulations to Splatoon 2. You can find reviews for most of these games on polygon.com, I think. Maybe not, certainly not Miitopia, but maybe some of the others.
No, we got a review up today.
Allegra wrote the review.
She liked it too,
Miitopia.
Right? She was excited to get to play a good game for once. usually she gets the stinkers. August is also Night Trap. So fuck y'all. It's going to be pretty good. That's going to do it for us. So until next month for the other Jokers, my name is Justin McElroy. We will rejoin you in August for the besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!